Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the first of the Football Ramble World Cup specials in association with history. We've got five of these World Cup specials starting today, where we go way back to 1990 with Cameroon's incredible defeat of world champions Argentina and finish with a look at the time a 23-year-old David Beckham was sent off for that naughty little kick out at Diego Simeone in 1998. These five World Cup specials are brought to you by History Who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks starting on 28th of May. You can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT or Talk Talk. My name is, of course, Marcus Speller, and I'm joined by Luke Moore, Jim Campbell and Pete Donaldson.
Hey, hello. How exciting.
It's World Cup time, gentlemen.
It's memory lane time.
Yeah,
World Cup memory lane.
As far as I'm concerned, the World Cup, Jim, starts here.
Is there any finer lane than World Cup memory lane?
No, there's not.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember.
And for the younger listeners, our memories are better than yours.
Yeah. Depending on who you are.
That's true. But Cameroon beating Argentina in the opening match of Italia 90 was very much the shock result of to get that tournament underway.
An uncharacteristic understatement from Mark. It was, and I'll tell you why, because this is the first tournament I fully remember.
Had you heard of Cameroon?
Well, not really, and I think this is really important to the point I'm going to make, which is that it's very easy to forget these days because the world's a lot smaller and we've got the internet and we've got connection and everyone knows everything. Back in 1990, the only time realistically you'd see players who weren't playing in England, and maybe we'll talk a bit about Gazzetta Football Italia when we talk about an Italian-related one of these later in the series, is that a World Cup or a European tournament? And it was impossibly exotic to be able to watch world champions Argentina from 86 against Cameroon in Italy in the opening game of World Cup 90. Yeah. And I remember my heart beating a million miles a minute looking forward to this tournament starting at the age of 9 years old. It was fantastic.
It was absolutely superb. Cameroon, of course, to give an ounce of background to this, they had been at a World Cup before in 82 where they went out in the first round undefeated. A bit like New Zealand in 2010.
The only undefeated team in 2010, New Zealand.
That's right, yeah. They drew 1-1 with Italy in 1982 to Cameroon, who went on to win the tournament. So, yeah, a bit of a shock result they'd already had under their belt, in a way, but not as much. Anywhere near the same magnitude as this one. They were the first African team to really make a mark at a World Cup, I think is fair to say. Morocco had reached the second round in 86, and Algeria had beaten West Germany 2-1 at the finals in 1982, but this was different. It didn't feel... When you look back on it, perhaps the first result, you could maybe be forgiven, but the way that Cameroon went into that tournament, it didn't feel like luck.
No.
This was a good side.
The complication, if you look back at, I did a bit of research into this looking back over the years, and Cameroon had a bit of a problem going into this tournament, and they were in disarray. The coach apparently didn't speak any French.
His translator apparently was his chauffeur.
Yeah, his chauffeur was the translator.
He was from Russia or Soviet Union at the time.
Thomas Nkono came in as the goalkeeper late on. I think they had a bit of a debate over who was going to be the goalkeeper and who wasn't. Some of the players had their own opinions. Mm-hmm. There was a dispute about bonuses, who was going to be paid, were they going to be paid on time and all this stuff. And if you take it in that context, going into this opening game, the curtain raiser, Argentina getting the honour of opening the tournament as the champions in the San Siro against a team who... Really, I mean, you'd be forgiven for thinking this is going to be a nice pipe opener for Argentina, a nice walk in the park to get themselves into it. Mm. Maradona, who's just won the league with Napoli, he's going to have a lovely old time. And no, that is not at all what happened.
I mean, also, the background of it is, I think this is, you know, as you touched on earlier, this is around the last time where it was even sort of possible to have a game like this. You can't really have a game like this now. There are no teams that are as unknown as Cameroon would
absolutely
have been then. It's just there is not a modern equivalent. If you weren't,
how do you do research on the opposition?
Yeah. I mean, but the
back
thing
in
is,
those days,
even then though, a lot of those Cameroon players, they were playing either in Cameroon or for like French second division teams. It wasn't like they were known quantities in any sense.
You're right, Jim. Half the Cameroon squad were plying their trade in Europe at the time, but I don't think any of the outfield players were playing in a top-flight team. I think the goalkeeper might have been, but none of
them. Thomas Nkono was probably their best player.
Right.
Considered one of the best African goalkeepers of all time.
But that's in retrospect. Was he considered that then, do you think?
I think he was a good player. I forget which side he played for.
He was at Espanyol.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, okay. So he was, but still not a top Spanish side.
No.
You know, it was a very respectable one. Mm. But you're right, and Argentina, you know, they boasted great names. You know, Diego Maradona, you know, Pompidou, the goalkeeper. Yes, he was replaced by Sergio Goycochea.
Claudio.
Caniggia.
Yeah.
Burruchaga.
Claudio Caniggia was actually very fortunate to have survived the game. Yeah. Based on what happened.
Yeah. But it was... this match, a lot of people coming into the football around that time or watching the World Cup, they would have probably seen Cameroon as fodder for the Argentinians in that opening game. I mean, Peter Brackley, the commentator, the match I watched back,
yeah, I watched it back too.
Yeah, he says...
It's not at all as you expect.
No, he says, and what an honour bestowed here on the players of Cameroon sharing centre stage on this opening day with the holders Argentina.
There's your attitude.
Wow. There you go. Yeah.
You know.
And if you look at kind of like the results historically through the World Cup since 66 probably.
First match has always been a belter.
they're always goalless draws. 66, England goalless draw against Uruguay. 1970, Mexico drew against the USSR. Goalless. 74, Brazil, Yugoslavia. All goalless. West Germany, Poland in 78, goalless, because Argentina, even though it was in Argentina, they played all their matches in the evening and everyone had a real problem with that. And that's why FIFA changed the rules, because Argentina always knew.
Back in the day, you could fudge it around. remember that famous game where the two teams just played out a mind-numbing draw because they knew they were both going to go through?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was West Germany and Austria, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the great things about the World Cup. It tells you a lot about football. It tells you a lot about
society.
How the games evolve, chiefly because at FIFA, they're making it up as they go along. That really bad thing that's happened, can't do that again. We better change that.
That's right.
They're using what we call experience-based learning.
Indeed, indeed. Speaking of that kind of, I suppose, feeling of chat, Diego Maradona said before the game, or before the tournament, that he felt it was a fix that Argentina had been given a tough group, which included a good Romania side and the Soviet Union, who were very good at the time.
Not even mentioned Cameroon there, is
it? Yeah, but he retracted that statement, otherwise he could have got himself in trouble with FIFA, of course. But this is Diego Maradona, considered by many the world's greatest player at the time. He started doing keep-ups just before the whistle blew to get the game underway. Yeah. He's doing keep-ups with his shoulder to the cheers of the crowd. I mean, it was incredible. But
you'll be doing that on the other side of your shoulder later.
Well, yeah, he certainly would be if his body was still intact.
This game, when we go on to talk about the game, it was... I don't want to paint Cameroon out as being these guys who just kicked everyone around and that was all they had in their locker, because that wasn't the case at all throughout the tournament, and we know they went on to achieve something great.
But that was at the front of their locker.
Yeah, but they were. Yeah, they were.
That was the first thing they could grab at in their locker. They on the locker. There was a picture of their childhood sweetheart in the door.
Yeah.
And then kicking was very much.
It was front and centre bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say
it was the sponge off the cake. I really want to make this point just so you know, because I watched it. Obviously, I watched it as a kid, and you watch the goals back, and you know all about it. But when you actually watch a game in retrospect as an adult, and you look at all these details. One of the most indicative things, knowing what transpired, is when teams come out and Diego Maradona is not only wearing shin pads, but he's wearing calf pads as well.
That's mad, isn't it?
I have never seen a player do that.
Yeah.
I know he was one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, if not the best player of all time. But he must have been used to that sort of treatment. But
even so,
he's putting something on the back of his leg, which is probably going to make it harder for him to manoeuvre.
Do you know what? Yeah. If I once rewatched the 1986 World Cup. I say rewatched, I didn't watch it originally. And the treatment he gets by that West German side is ridiculous. It was very, very viable to just say, there's their best player, kick him about. And it's little wonder the rules change to help protect these players.
It's amazing that players thought that they could get away with being a bit flary, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to get kicked. If I do a step over, I'm going to get kicked.
Well, it's basically painting a big target on your back, aren't
Well, that's the madness. It discourages that type of flair play.
Yeah.
It really does. But you're right, Luke. This Cameroon side, though, they were more than that. They had quality and determination, and weren't afraid to use a bit of brute force, it's fair to say. But the manager, the Russian manager, Valery Nepomniachtchi, sent out his troops into battle, and they were not there to make up the numbers. And it became very evident when the game started.
You're absolutely right. And it's not, as I just mentioned briefly earlier, this is not a game at all. For those who, I would recommend you go and watch it. It's an iconic game. If you get a chance, do go and watch it. I mean, if you can't go back and watch it, I mean, you can go and you can watch the FIFA Films Presents Italia 1990 on History on the Friday the 1st of June at 7 p.m. But if you do get a chance, watch the whole game, because if you look at it on paper, you're probably going to think, well, Argentina battered them and Cameroon sucker punched them and Argentina just couldn't score.
Not the case.
And that was it. 53% possession, Cameroon.
That's mad. They finished the game with nine men.
53% possession. They had, I mean, they were valued. I wouldn't say necessarily they had all the best chances and all the rest of it, but they were value for this. They were value.
They finished the first half on this front foot.
I mean, they butchered a couple of Argentina's players, but they were value.
Yeah.
And can I also say, Argentina weren't backwards in coming forward.
No, of course they weren't.
This is a side who knew how to deploy a bit of rough and tumble.
There's a reason they're called
the
Angels with Dirty Faces.
Damn right they are. Damn right. But Cameroon were not intimidated by the whole occasion. Now, what you just said there minutes earlier, Luke, about their setup perhaps being a little bit disarray.
How do you think they were approaching it, though? Do you think they were thinking, right, anything we get out of this game is a bonus. It's our hardest game. We'll just try and go out there and get what we can.
I think that they had a good feeling in the camp. I think that they knew they had a bit of quality. Roger Miller coming back. Mm. Of course, the veteran. He was rumoured to be 38 years old at the time.
He didn't start the game, did he?
He came on. And my goodness, that was another thing that really was wonderful to see. The silky touches and skills of Roger Miller. Mm. When you have a player like that, genuinely lovely technique, could keep the ball. I mean, there are times, you know, normally you bring on, you know, England would bring on, not in that tournament, but in a tournament a lot later, you bring on like De Rijs Vassell or something to run around a lot. Bring on a 38-year-old man to help you see out the game, you know.
His legs haven't been fresh for years.
But he could hold up the ball and so on.
He'd retired from international football 3 years prior to that.
He was playing semi-pro.
He was living on Reunion Island.
That's right.
Which is,
and what a reunion it was, Jim.
Indeed.
Yeah, very apt.
Hanging out with a young Laurent Robert.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that you do get golden generations. You do get it sometimes when the stars realign and so on. And I think as well with Nkono in goal, it gives you that platform with his tracksuit bottoms, you know, nice wearing in the Milan sunshine.
It's Milan in July. Yeah. June. Come on.
We should say, after 9 minutes, the first booking occurred. Benjamin Massing going in hard. Wouldn't be the last time he went in hard during the game. The second booking is the one I want to draw attention to after 23 minutes. In this day and age, and probably should have been back then, but certainly in this day and age, it would have been a straight red card. Because I'll tell you why. Because it was a boot to the upper body of Maradona. I mean, the referee gave him a booking, so he's obviously seen something. It was ridiculous.
He's probably thinking, I've heard all about his dangerous left foot, but he's a powerful chester of the ball.
Yeah. Let's nullify that chest.
Let's take that weapon out of his armoury.
Let's take his nip off.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But Cameroon, they didn't let Argentina get in their stride. And we're going to talk about what happened in the second half after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the first of our World Cup specials in association with History, where we're looking back at the opening fixture this time of the 1990 World Cup between Cameroon and Argentina. Now, Cameroon, they started the second half as they finished the first. Claudio Caniggia had come on for Argentina, a decision that well, he personally would regret.
Yeah.
I mean,
although it wasn't his decision, of course, but you know what I mean.
I cannot wait to talk about this. So just please get the intro out of the way.
Okay. Do you remember, Marcus, you and I were at Club Wembley once and Kinesia was there?
I was there too, wasn't I? Or was it me
I think it was you and Peter.
We were all there, but he was in one part of the stadium and only two of us were there. Yeah. It wasn't me.
So we were at the buffet, basically.
Yeah. I can confirm.
If we were going to choose which of the four of us were at the buffet, it was me and Jim, weirdly. So,
oddly.
You were blocking off Kinesia.
I can confirm there is still a split right down the middle of him, like a cracked sapling.
Yeah, it's just a light shining out of it.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean,
football sap.
Benjamin Massing, one of the big defenders for Cameron, he was already on a booking.
He sadly died last year.
Oh,
Benjamin
did he?
Massing, yeah, passed
away, 55. Great shame.
But Marcus, this
left his mark on the World Cup and some Argentinian players.
But this was in the 88th minute. We've got to talk about the goal first.
We do have to talk about the goal. Well, Massing was on a booking, and at one point blocks Maradona off in a way that a player wouldn't nowadays if they were on a booking. Yeah. It just goes to show you the different, I suppose, footballing culture in one sense or playing style at the time. It's only 1990, for crying out loud. Anyway, after an hour, the first red card of the tournament and the game, Canobiec sent off.
Brother of the goal scorer, by the way.
Yeah, quite harshly.
I think it's an outrageous decision.
Yeah.
I think the referee, honestly.
And perhaps there was some levelling up.
I'll tell you something else about this referee a bit later on.
Yeah.
The French referee, I think his name is Vautreau, is it? Yeah, Michel Vautreau. I think, and this is controversial, but we know the game wasn't as professional in terms of officiating then as it is now. Mm. I think the referee here, it's completely innocuous. For me, it's a dictionary definition yellow. He breaks it. It's a breakaway. He pulls him down.
It's on Kinesia.
It's on Kinesia, yeah.
He might not have even meant it.
I think the referee was just full up of all the fouling.
Yeah.
I just thought, what? I'm going to put a marker down here and say, you've made no attempt to play the ball. I'm fed up with this. You're off. I think in isolation, it's an appalling decision. I can sort of understand it, but it's not as bad as the decision in 1994 with Zola, which we'll probably talk about in a later show. But it's up there as a fairly poor decision.
Yeah, it didn't work though, did it?
No, because they scored 6 minutes later. Yeah. Do you know what?
Well, Bijik blew kisses to the crowd as he goes off.
Andre Canobiec gets sent off, blows kisses to the crowd.
Yeah.
6 minutes later, 10-man Cameroon's, his brother, Francis Owen Bijik, scores.
Leaps like a salmon.
Oh, you will not like us when we're angry. The indomitable lions are angry
now.
Well,
it was interesting. Before the tournament, FIFA president Joël Havelange said that the referees, if they didn't give red cards when they should, then they'll be sent home. And we saw this with
There was a crackdown going into the tournament.
There was. We saw this result with Uncle Sepp Blatter, I think, in 1998. After the group stages, I remember vividly everyone saying, what a great job the referees were doing. They were letting the game go. They were pulling it back when they needed to. Mm. And Blatter said, this isn't good enough. They need to clamp down a bit more.
Yeah.
For some reason, because people were saying how well the referees
did. Poor, wasn't
he? Probably. He needed to say something. And and the referee after that got a little bit worse. You know, they were a bit more card happy. But back to the game. Cameroon, they go 1-0 up.
It's a great goal.
Oh, man.
It's a mad goal.
He tamely heads past Pompidou.
He mistimes his jumps. I know
it was less Fernandes the way he hung in the air.
It's hard to header a ball coming directly down, and it was coming directly down on his head. He mistimes his jump. Still manages to get a pretty decent purchase, but it is a directly at Pompidou.
How many weird things have to happen in a row for that to go in the back of the net? It's quite a lot.
It's mad, isn't it?
Argentinian defender, I think, just lets him go.
Yeah. It's Sensini, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just think, he's never going to get any power out of that, and he doesn't. But it still goes in.
Well, Pompidou completely fluffs it, of course.
It's like the Argentinian defenders probably think, I would have headed that if you were going.
Yeah. It's the angle that it comes down at Pompidou, isn't it? It's such an odd angle for him to prepare for that he just can't get his body right.
It was reprehensible, man.
He had a tournament to forget, really, Pompidou, because it was that. And then it obviously got injured and he was out of the tournament.
Well, Sergio Nery Pompidou sounds like a man denying a pump.
Yeah.
I nary pumpy dude. I nary do it.
And I do it again. The popular misconception about Pompidou is that because of that error, he's dropped for the second game, but he isn't. He starts the second game, but he breaks his leg after 9 or 10
horrible
minutes
injury.
And never plays again in the tournament.
Yeah,
obviously.
But when the goal goes in, this
I
is...
I think he faked that broken leg.
Well, no, I broke my leg on the Cameroon chance. And I've only just realised, that's why, it wasn't my fault.
Well, when the goal goes in, this is where Cameroon's rather exuberant goal celebrations were first witnessed by the world stage and thoroughly enjoyed.
I'll tell you something now. Everyone wants a part of it. They've all just said, "I'm not missing out on this."
Yeah.
where I'm coming in. I don't
go,
care if I'm 100 metres away. I'm getting involved.
The Cameroon celebration at the World Cup, obviously we remember Miller's wiggle. It's just so joyous. It's blooming marvellous. Anyway, the Cameroon defence, it stood firm against the Argentinian attack, making use of the back pass. Because the back pass hadn't been brought in.
A lot of that.
Can I also say, that's a euphemistic term to use. They stood firm.
Yeah.
They stood on everyone. Firmly.
Oh, dear. Now, there's a moment with about 15 minutes to go where Claudio Caniggia picks up the ball in his own half and drives, as we know he could do in his career.
He was
wonderful player.
For that.
Absolutely superb. With those locks, when he went, it was a superb sight. Running down the wing. Now, one defender tries to take him down, but Caniggia's away. He's gone past him. Then another defender gets a bit of him. Mm. I mean, he's intentionally trying to maim him.
Even that, though, the bit where he gets a bit of Caniggia.
Oh, and that would be
players
enough.
Players now would go down and it's probably a booking.
And they should go down for that. It was absolutely terrible.
This was like a couple of minutes from the end. It was later than 15 minutes to go.
Oh, no, I don't know.
It was honestly, it was like at the 88th minute or something.
Oh, no, right you are. Sorry, right you are. Oh, no, sorry, this is another one I'm thinking of. This happened
when... about to say, before that, he gets assaulted as well.
There's so many, Luke, I'm getting confused.
It's easily done.
All on Caniggia as well.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's like trying to dish out speeding tickets for Formula 1.
Maradona's taking off his pads, going, I need him. Caniggia's very much the sexy target here.
Yeah, he's taking the heat off.
Why am I on the tactical board listed as decoy?
It's chaff. Caniggia's chaff.
Yeah.
The wispiest man in the stadium, let alone on the pitch.
I know. Sorry, yeah, you're absolutely right, Luke. 50 minutes to get, he breaks down the wing. One defender gets him, and it's like on his way down, the other one does him as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's really a case of stop him and use whatever means necessary, but you've got to stop
him. The worst one is the Benjamin Massing one.
Oh, my
Because
goodness.
A couple of minutes to go, Caniggia, who usually absolutely loved a dive, but he realises the stakes are high, tries to stay on his feet. Yeah. In a scene reminiscent of Willem Dafoe's character Elias in Platoon at the end, where he suddenly eventually falls to his knees and drops down.
Yeah.
And the assaults just keep on coming. That's right. He is absolutely peppered. He is hit so hard by Benjamin Massing, who's already on a booking, right, that Massing gets his own boot cleaved from his foot.
Yeah.
Mm. And to use Pete Davis's words, who wrote the fantastic book All Played Out, which I'd recommend to anyone. And if you like that, there's a One Night in Turin film of it on History on Tuesday 29th of May at 6:30 p.m. Pete Davis says the following words, which I think are amazing. It was kind of a full pelt, waist-high, horizontal flying body check. The general intention seemed to be not so much to break Caniggia's legs as to actually separate them from the rest of his body. Massing gets a second yellow for that.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I didn't even realise Massing... When you watch that clip, it's like, that's Caniggia's foot in that boot. Yeah. It's not his boot. It's his foot, even though it's Massing's shoe.
If that happened now, I genuinely would be appalled and think, you know, that's an absolute disgrace.
Oh, he would probably get an extended ban for that.
Yeah. Easy.
But I think, like, because it happened back then, and you just think footballers were made of different stuff, or that was just the way sometimes you could play.
I think if you grew up in that generation as a flair attacking player, you knew you were going to get targeted. And look what happened to Maradona at Barcelona.
Yeah.
All these types of players were very used to this. I mean, the late, great Ray Wilkins once said to me, one thing that's never said, he made, I think, if it wasn't his debut, it was one of his earliest appearances for Chelsea against George Best at Man United.
Oh, yeah.
He said, obviously, everything I say about him is true, brilliant player. Something that's never mentioned about George Best, he was the hardest opponent. He was the toughest man I've played against because, to be honest, he had to be.
Yeah,
he wouldn't last 5 minutes in the 60s playing for Man United, getting targeted like that from some of those players. So I think a lot of these players, I know it's a bit before that, but a lot of these players, generally speaking, they know it's part of the game.
Yeah. Very much so, very much so. Well, Cameroon won the game 1-0, and then the celebration started. Every person associated with that side on the bench were on the field, running around. It was super.
Just before they win it, and I'm anxious for us not to paint Cameroon out to be these physically playing on the limit, no quality type team, because they weren't that.
Well, 53%, but they passed the ball well.
They played well, they had chances, they almost scored again towards the end. But just to sort of play a further thread through this like violence theme. I don't know if you guys noticed. Again, one of these things you notice when you watch the game back. About a minute to go, Argentina have an attack. Cameroonian player gets the ball and he clears it. And the way he clears it is he pelts it into the crowd as hard as he can and it hits a child in the face. And that child has to be helped up by his family.
Oh,
and the camera lingers on it for way too long. And it's very indicative of sort of how it's almost a metaphor for what's happened for the last 8 years before that. Mm. It's basically almost saying not even the crowd are safe.
Yeah, yeah. But with this Cameroon side, they became such a likeable team. They're one of my favourite teams of all time. They became the underdogs that many people get behind. Now, we've seen in subsequent World Cups, of course, many underdogs: Bulgaria, Croatia, South Korea, Ghana, as well. But this.
How do you think this compares, Marcus? Just because we talked a bit about how the world is smaller and more information is known about opponents these days. Mm-hmm. If we fast forward to 2002, Senegal, France. France are the world champions. They won it at home soil.
Similar occasion, similar.
How do you think this compares in terms of the upset level?
It's similar, I think. Well, no, I think because France had a bit of a disaster that tournament, I think with hindsight you can say that Cameroon beating that Argentina side would be a bigger result.
Because Argentina, of course, make the final.
Exactly, whereas France went out in the first round and they had a disaster. But it's very comparable. But I think this put Cameroon on the footballing map. But not just that, it put, if you know what I mean, like unknown sides on the footballing map, if you know what I mean. Incredibly, you know, Gazza admitted when England beat Cameroon in the quarterfinal, and only just, he said, "Oh, we underestimated them." Mm. I think, well, how on earth did you underestimate them?
They beat Argentina.
You then have, you know, back in those days, videotapes of them beating other teams. You can watch them.
And I don't think Gazza's temperament is such that he would underestimate, like overestimate anyone. Really,
he probably doesn't think about any of them. Yeah, no. Yeah.
More football. Let's play. Yeah. Football.
Yeah. Let's play against 12 men.
But this would have no doubt inspired a generation of particularly African players, I think.
And what do you think about this?
No West African side had done anything really at World Cups before then.
What do you think about this in terms of the pantheon of, because we talked a lot about Maradona, obviously you can't keep him out of the headlines ever, but what do you think, how do you think this, you know, clearly his big tournament is 86, and it goes on there. I mean,
was still a big tournament for Maradona.
Oh, massively, because it was in Italy. I understand that, but he had
a very eventful tournament. I mean, he went on to brilliantly assist Caniggia to score the winning goal against Brazil in the second round.
That was a great ball.
I mean, he was kicked about again. You know, he was absolutely and you can understand when Maradona. You know, obviously the comparisons with Messi, and Messi scored tons more goals, but Messi's protected a lot more. Messi's still hard, you know. You watch, they see he still gets kicked about, but it's nothing the treatment Maradona gets.
But I just think the expectation of what people were hoping from him for 1990, because it was in Italy, because he had just won the title in Italy, and it was based there. And because of the impact of the hand of, not the hand of God goal, which of course is a whole other story, but the second goal he scored. I mean, to put it in perspective, Gary Lineker said about Diego Maradona's goal in 86, when Diego scored that second goal against us, I felt like applauding, and I'd never felt like that before. Not just because it was such an important game, it was impossible to score such a beautiful goal. Mm. He's the greatest player of all time by a long way, a genuine phenomenon. So the expectation of what they wanted from him in 90, surely that would have been hugely dampened after this first game.
It would have been, but like I say, he still picked himself up. Him and his fellow countryman Sergio Goycochea made the all-star team. Yeah. He still had a great tournament, of course. You know, again, that assist against Brazil, you can't underestimate
under such pressure with his right foot as well.
He had a funny moment in the penalty shootout against Yugoslavia in the quarterfinal. A remarkable penalty shootout. I would implore anybody to find that and watch that again. He missed. But then he took a penalty in Naples against Italy in the semi-final, tucked it away, celebrated like the game was over. They still needed to do a few bits and pieces, but they did get through. And in the final, it was a nice matchup between him and Lothar Matthäus, who would, you know, again, what a player he was. And it was really the last time we saw Maradona perform at his level on the world stage, of course, because then in 1994, he came back, did score a nice goal.
It was a performance of sorts.
Indeed, yeah. Scored against Greece, I think it was, but then later banned, thrown out the tournament for testing positive for a banned substance or two.
Ephedrine, I think it was.
Yeah, but when you talk about Maradona, you have to talk about the good and the bad, don't you? I mean, in 1982 World Cup, he made his mark. He played very well. He got sent off, again, getting treatment from Brazil, and he reacted. You mentioned 86 and so on.
In 78, of course, he was less left out as a 17-year-old from an Argentinian World Cup on home soil. Yeah, as well,
fuming about it as well.
But sadly, you know, in 94 he let himself and his team down, you know.
Go on, Jim.
I was going to say, it's actually very interesting if you read what Maradona said after the Cameroon game, because, you know, we know what a volatile character he is and how sort of emotionally led he is, but his words are actually, I don't think they had any intentions of beating us up to win the game. I cannot argue and I cannot make excuses. If Cameroon won, it was because they were the best side. Yeah, and that's the most biased Argentinian on the planet.
And there's a fair few of them.
We should reserve the final word for Cameroon and their celebrations as well after the tournament. But just before we do that, you mentioned that a penalty shootout later in the tournament, and earlier on I mentioned the referee, Michel Fortreau. he made some questionable decisions in that game, and I think we all agree on that. But he got in trouble later in the tournament, check this out, for adding 8 minutes of added time in the first half of extra time in the semi-final between Italy and Argentina because he later admitted he forgot to check his watch.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
I'm just enjoying the game, lads. Oh, excuse me. It's a great game.
That's absolutely...
8 minutes on a 15-minute half. The players must have been... Why didn't one of the players ask him?
Yeah.
I'm knackered here. What's happening?
Because none of them want to because they look like they're not committed.
Yeah.
If I asked you to sort of, like, mark out 15 minutes, like, just sit here in silence 15 minutes, I mean, it would be wonderful, but also...
be about
like,
20 seconds.
You'd probably be able to get in the ball park, probably closer than 8 minutes, I reckon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I
think that the last word should go to Cameroon.
Yeah.
France's Oman Biak, obviously the goal scorer, his comments were quite revealing. And I wonder if this was the first time that African football was taken properly seriously, as you said earlier, Marcus. Oman Biak said, "We hate it when European reporters ask us if we eat monkeys and have a witch doctor. We are real football players and we prove this tonight." There was apparently a national holiday in Cameroon when they went home after the tournament. They gave England a massive scare, as we know. And Oman Biak said that when the plane came into land in Douala, I think it was, it had to pull up and go around again as there were people celebrating literally on the runway.
Amazing. Incredible. Yeah.
Again, different airports back then.
It was pre-September 11th.
But they were a joy. They were an absolute joy.
Yeah.
They were.
And what a game. One of the great opening games to a tournament.
And when a game goes like that, the tournament is almost blown wide open.
Yeah. Mm.
Teams will look around.
You'll
start thinking,
England can win this thing.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you something now, if Cameroon can beat Argentina, we can definitely labour to a last-minute winner against Belgium.
Yeah, exactly. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. That was the first of the Football Ramble World Cup specials in association with history. We've got five of these World Cup specials, including this one, of course. And we shall be finishing with a look at the time a 23-year-old David Beckham was sent off for that naughty little kick out at Diego Simeone in 1998. These five World Cup specials are brought to you by History, who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks, starting on the 28th of May. You can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT, or TalkTalk.
And don't forget to check out Bring Me the Head of Diego Maradona, Friday the 1st of June at 9 p.m. on History, to hear more about the great man himself.
Certainly.
And hear Peter Reid, God, I just couldn't catch him. I just couldn't catch him.
Dizzy.
The famous Luke Moore five-a-side refrain, he was just too quick for you.
That's right. There we are. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.